the truth.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, the rodeo of free speech. It's where you go and you get on the Broncos and you get on the Bulls and you ride them and you yee-haw very freely. And you can do that by going to republicbroadcasting.org, clicking on the donate button, and sending a donation. And make sure that your rodeo food that you go to afterwards is non-kosher certified. So download that Kosher-tified app and make sure it is non-kosher certified chili and beans or whatever. Okay, today is Monday, so this is our day where we concentrate on China, although I did concentrate on China on Friday too. I just couldn't help myself. But anyway, today we have Cato with us. Cato, welcome to the show.
Yes, good to be back, Dr. Slattery. Maybe a few rodeos in China, too, coming soon.
Radio? Oh, okay, and what would they ride?
Pretty much the same as what you see in the U.S. Mostly bulls and horses, and it's pretty much just a copy. Although, most of that is in northern China, in the Inner Mongolia. That's where you're going to find the... Because Mongolia is very horse... So that's where you're going to find any Chinese rodeo, is in the Inner Mongolia.
Okay, and I've been in Inner Mongolia. Yeah, that makes sense. The Mongols were the ultimate horsemen and had the largest land empire in the history of humanity based on their horsemanship. So there you go. Okay, that's pretty cool. Hey, this is besides the point, but I was always... You know what a red panda or a lesser panda is?
It's much smaller panda that climbs on trees and all that.
Yeah, they climb on trees there. And they're very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't the Chinese ever domesticate them as pets? Because, I mean, they're just so cute.
I'm not sure. Maybe because they haven't gotten around to it yet. But maybe in the future we'll see that. Just like in Russia, you see people, they domesticate bears. So if Russians can domesticate bears.
Well, I mean, Putin doesn't even need to domesticate them. He's just fine with them being wild because they respect him. He taught a bear how to play the trumpet and officiate soccer games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, actually, you know, I it's probably because the lesser panda is from remote areas and just wasn't really in contact with people very much. Mm-hmm. But I hope they get around to it because they are very, very cute. All right. Anyway, and because the thing is, they look like some people think raccoons are ugly, but they have the raccoon kind of face, except much cuter, like a teddy bear style. And then plus their hands are... They have hands instead of just paws. They can actually pick up things in their hands. So if they're going to eat an apple, they don't put their face down to the apple. They pick the apple up in their hand and put it in their mouth. And it's just cute. Okay. Anyway, so last week we were going through an article, something written by Wang Honing. And why don't we pick up where we left off?
Okay, so yeah, this is an article on Wang Honing, basically talking about last week we covered his early life and where he was, how he was developing his views in the 80s when China was developing. And we talked about how initially he saw the United States and looked at the United States and said, yeah, that's a good example and that the U.S. is what we need to follow.
And this is the member of the Politburo, right?
Yeah, this is a member of the top Politburo.
And so he's one of like a half dozen or dozen of the most elite leaders of China then.
Yes, yeah, he's one of the most elite. So he originally thought, yeah, let's, the United States is the example we need to follow, until he actually visited the United States, and then his mind completely changed. And the article continues. So here's what it says. It says, a dark vision. In 1988, Wang, having risen with unprecedented speed to become Fu Dan's youngest full professor at the age of 30, won a coveted scholarship facilitated by the American Political Science Association to spend 6 months in the United States as a visiting scholar. Profoundly curious about America, Wang took full advantage, wandering about the country like a sort of latter-day Chinese Alexis de Tocqueville, visiting more than 30 cities and nearly 20 universities.
And what year was this?
This was 1988.
Okay, I remember it. I remember that year. Mm-hmm. It's during the 1988 presidential election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think so.
A lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Says what he found deeply disturbed him, permanently shifting his view of the West and the consequences of his ideas. Wang recorded his observations in a memoir that would become his most famous work, the 1991 book America Against America, which, by the way, is a huge, huge popular seller in China, America Against America. In it, he marvels at homeless encampments in the streets of Washington, D.C., out-of-control drug crime in poor black neighborhoods in New York and San Francisco.
Absolutely.
And all the other major cities with a lot of blacks. And corporations that seem to have fused themselves to and taken over the responsibilities of government. That's your neoliberalism right there. Eventually, he concludes that America faces an unstoppable undercurrent crisis produced by its societal contradictions, including between rich and poor, white and black, democratic and oligarchic power, egalitarianism and class privilege, individual rights and collective responsibilities, traditional cultural traditions, and the solvent of liquid modernity. But while Americans can, he says, perceive that they are faced with intricate social and cultural problems, they tend to think of them as scientific and technological problems to be solved separately. This gets them nowhere, he argues, because their problems are in fact all inextricably interlinked and have the same root cause, a radical nihilistic individualism at the heart of modern American liberalism. The real cell of society in the United States is the individual, he finds. This is so because the cell most foundational per Aristotle to society, the family, has disintegrated. Meanwhile, in the American system, everything has a dual nature and the glamour of high commodification abounds. Human flesh, sex, knowledge, politics, power, and law can all become the target of commodification. This commodification, in many ways, corrupts society and leads to a number of serious social problems. In the end, the American economic system has created human loneliness, and that's very true, a sentence. It has definitely created human loneliness as its foremost product, along with spectacular inequality. As a result, nihilism has become the American way, which is a fatal shock to cultural development and the American spirit. So that's what that was what he observed when he visited the United States.
Well, that's very interesting because I was in the United States in 1988 also, and I was traveling around, and believe it or not, I was working on the Jesse Jackson campaign because Jesse Jackson was he was anti-Cold War, and he was pro-Palestinian, and I was a foreign policy person, and it's like, well, okay. You know, maybe back in the 70s, he said some inflammatory things about white people. But his campaigns in 84 and 88 were, if they had racial overtones, they were pretty hard to detect. I mean, he was really, really trying hard to reach out to farmers, you know, white farmers and workers and all sorts of people. And and also, this was pre-internet, so it was, you know, if to the extent he had positions, like official positions, if they weren't things he was talking about regularly, then you probably wouldn't have ever heard about it. So, you know, people would write into his headquarters in D.C., and part of the time I was working at his headquarters, they'd write in and say, "What's his position on such and such?" And I'd say, "Oh, okay, well, let me get your name and address, and we'll send you a letter." And, you know, then I'd go and look through the filing cabinet, and find a position paper. And if the Xerox copy machine worked, which half the time it didn't because he didn't have any money, But if it worked, I'd make a copy of the position paper and send it by snail mail. And that's how you could find out. Of course, you could call in and somebody would say, okay, I'll send you a position paper, and you'd never get one. And so we were very, very low information back then. But like I say, I was traveling around and I was going to different states and different cities. And I saw a lot of things. And just in Washington, D.C., there was a huge number of homeless in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House. And I remember one day, Washington, D.C. has very its voter registration laws were very lax. And so you don't have to have an address. Your address could be a bench, the third bench from the corner in Lafayette Park. And so I remember going down with a mayor of a German town who had come to observe America the same way Wang Honing had. And he was on a tour, and I took him to Lafayette Park. He wanted to see the homeless situation, took him there. And we just registered people to vote. I don't know how many of them actually voted. And then we went over to a homeless shelter, which was run by some guy named Mitch. I can't remember what his name was. Mitch, he later died, but he was pretty famous. He had started this homeless shelter in D.C., and there was just hundreds and hundreds of people staying there, because there's drug problems and whatnot, a lot of drug problems. This was, I guess, crack cocaine was becoming a big thing. And I remember going to a high school, and this was also on a Jesse Jackson event. I was invited to talk to a class about the Jesse Jackson campaign. It wasn't really like a campaign event, but just, you know, people were curious. And I went to this class in the hood in Anacostia, and which is not a nice place to be. And that was the first place I saw crack vials. They were just lying on the ground in front of the high school. So you saw lots and lots of homeless people. So homelessness was a big deal. And then what else was there? A teenage pregnancy, which I guess probably peaked in the early 90s. And it was especially a black thing. Not exclusively, but in particular a black thing. So you had the teenage pregnancy. It was a big deal. And then the last thing I just want to say is you did have crime. Crime was probably peaking right around 1988. And a lot of it was demographic in that the younger – so you think of boomers as being people born between 1946 and 1964. And they are largely the children of, returning GIs. So you had birth rates were low during the Depression because it was a depression. They were low during the Second World War because the men were they were in the army, and so birth rates were low. And then they came back, and you had a period of relative prosperity and high birth rates. And that's what the boomers. That's why we call them boomers. It's a baby boom. You had a very distinct rise in the birth rate, and the younger boomers. And just think of the younger black boomers in 1988 were still in their 20s, and they're still in their high crime years, right? But also you had like a secondary baby boom, the people who were born earlier in the baby boom. You were having an echo of it. Not as much in the white population, but I guess already in the white population, but especially in the black population, because the black generation is shorter, because blacks are more likely to have babies as teenagers, so their generation is shorter. So you just had an awful lot of people. Compared to now, the percentage of the black population that was in the teenage and 20s, you know, the male blacks in the teenagers and 20s, which is where most of the crime comes from, maybe up into the mid-30s, it was very high. And so that plus the drugs explains that. Anyway, I know that was kind of long-winded, but that's the type of thing that Wang Honing would have been seeing, or Wang Honing would have been seeing, and I was seeing that as well.
Yeah, one thing I want to say, too, is that kind of reminds me, what he's describing kind of reminds me of the setting in, like, in the Death Wish series with Charles Bronson, where you have all the high crime and all the muggers everywhere. Mm-hmm. Or like in the movie, the red pilling movie, They Live. Remember that They Live, that movie that people our side, we will often use that as an example of what's going on. I mean, but if you actually watch the whole movie, you see the income inequality and just the neoliberalism that has really wrecked the American cities and the United States as a whole. And so what he's describing here is those two movies basically remind me of what he's describing. But I guess I'll continue.
One last thing. So with income inequality, I mean, one thing in the United States, because of the racial issue in particular, it's not a homogeneous society. And so if you're Chinese or you're Korean or you're Japanese, you're from a homogeneous society, you're looking at the United States, the urban situation, a lot of things, like in an Asian city, you have rich people and poor people living on the same block. Mm-hmm. But because the poor people, they're Chinese or they're Korean or they're Japanese, and they're not committing a lot of crime, the rich people don't mind going to the same convenience store and riding the same subway with the poor people, because the poor people aren't attacking them. But in the United States, it's obviously not like that, and realistically may never be like that, and so it's just different here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's for the worse.
Oh, one last thing regarding Jesse Jackson, because probably the knowledge that I actually worked for Jesse Jackson 88 might be turning off a lot of people. But you know, one thing about Jesse Jackson, he was the candidate for president in the 1980s that was the one most opposed by the Jewish power structure, because primarily of his positions on the Middle East, on Israel, and on Palestine. And he was receiving death threats. And before the New York primary in 88, he was talking to people he thought were in his inner circle, and he referred to New York City because he was going to be going to New York City soon. He had a bad security situation there, Hymetown. And that Hymetown thing, I guess that was in the 84 election, but he said Hymetown. One of the people who was in the room was actually a Washington Post reporter and divulged it, and he never lived that down, that he referred to New York as Hymetown. But he had been getting death threats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're black or not. If you oppose the Jewish power structure, yeah, they're going to come after you, just like they've come after many black so-called civil rights leaders who, would be against us, but the Jewish power opposes them because they do speak out, against Israel for their crimes against the Palestinians. So, yeah, it at the end of the day, to the Jews, it doesn't matter.
Okay, well, we still have a minute before the break, so do you want to go a little bit more into this?
I'll do. I'll read the rest of it after the break.
Okay, well then, before the break, how do we fill this last minute?
I guess I can go on a little bit more about...
Okay. Well, I'll tell you about the Jesse Jackson campaign. So he was getting... His security... He did have Secret Service protection, but for a while he didn't really want the Secret Service protection. He was getting protection from Louis Farrakhan. And there are all these demands that he distanced himself from Louis Farrakhan, but he was getting protection from Louis Farrakhan because I guess he trusted them more than the Secret Service. He eventually got the Secret Service. So you always had this, you must denounce Farrakhan, you must denounce Farrakhan, just like Donald Trump was getting, you must denounce David Duke. Trump was funny. Trump was funny. He was, you must denounce, he said, was it one of those CNN reporters, I forgot the guy, but he says, "Will you denounce David Duke?" And he says, "I will if it'll make you feel better." It's kind of funny. But Jesse Jackson never denounced Farrakhan, to his credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, to his credit. Yeah, Farrakhan is definitely the, in my opinion, the best leader for blacks. But, that's up to them.
It's up to them. Okay, we are at the break now. We'll be right back.
Come on,
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
We are back, and it is time to read the rest of that Wang Huning article.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the article continues, basically talking about Wang Huning. He says, ultimately, he argues, when faced with critical social issues like drug addiction, America's atomized, deracinated, and dispirited society has found itself with an insurmountable problem because it no longer has any coherent conceptual grounds from which to mount any resistance. Once idealistic about America, at the start of 1989, the young Wang returned to China and promoted to dean of Fudan's International Politics Department, became a leading opponent of liberalization. He began to argue that China had to resist global influence and become a culturally unified and self-confident nation governed by a strong, centralized party state. This reflected his desire to blend Marxist socialism with traditional Chinese Confucian values and legalist political thought, maximalist Western ideas of state sovereignty and power, and nationalism, in order to synthesize a new basis for long-term stability and growth immune to Western liberalism. He was concerned with the question of how to manage China, one former Fudan student recalls, suggesting that a strong centralized state is necessary to hold this society together. He spent every night in his office and didn't do anything else. Wang's timing couldn't have been more auspicious. Only months after his return, China's own emerging contradictions exploded into a view in the form of student protests in Tiananmen Square. After PLA tanks crushed the dreams of liberal democracy sprouting in China, CCP leadership began searching desperately for a new political model on which to secure the regime. They soon turned to Wang Huning. When Wang won national acclaim by leading a university debate team to victory at an international competition in Singapore in 1993, he caught the attention of Jiang Zemin, who had become party leader after Tiananmen. Wang, having defeated National Taiwan University by arguing that human nature is inherently evil, foreshadowed that while Western modern civilization can bring material prosperity, it does not lead to improvement in character. Jiang plucked him from the university, and at the age of 40, he was granted a leadership position in the CCP's secretive Central Policy Research Office, putting him on an inside track into the highest echelons of power. And eventually, he worked his way all the way up to becoming, the central, one of the seven leading members of the CCP.
So, you know, I think when we started talking last week, did I compare him to Mikhail Suslov of USSR? Well, now I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. I didn't look at it last week. And it says in the second paragraph, widely regarded as Xi Jinping's gray cardinal or the Mikhail Suslov of China. So I guess I'm right. I mean, that's great because I'm not an expert into like CCP personnel, but yeah. So this is a very, very serious person. So I tell you one thing, anybody who is like hung up on Israel Epstein or some of these like so-called Jews that are supposedly Mao's inner circle or whatever, you know, you're completely missing the boat. There are they don't need Jews to do their thinking for them. The Chinese don't need Jews to do their thinking for them. It doesn't mean that Jews don't go all over the world to every single country on earth peddling ideas and pushing agendas. Of course that happens. They're a very idea and agenda-oriented people. But when you get down to it, even if you're talking about the CCP before it took over, when it was in the Civil War against the nationalists in China, they had Chinese people doing their thinking. They don't need Jews to do their thinking for them. And I think Wang Huning is a good example of that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, while it's interesting to point out that, yes, there were certain Jews that were involved in, let's say, forming relations with the Communist Party in the early years, the very, very early years when it was still under Mao, that is long since changed. That is long gone. Those times are long gone. And even then, even though there were Jews, you know, at the time, they were hopeful that communism would spread in their, you know, in their way, in their original way, but it didn't, because communism, post-Jewish Bolshevik communism, post-Bolshevik communism was of two forms. It morphed into Soviet revisionism or into what is called, you know, third world internationalism, which is really just non-Western nations rising up against Western colonialism and imperialism. Be that what it is. I mean, it's no longer this Jewish Bolshevik thing, communism. Yes, communism was created by Jews. It was created by Karl Marx, a Jew. And yes, it was started by Jews and led by Jews. The original communism was Jewish, but what we have now is not the original communism. It's far from it. It's complete opposite, almost. Even Soviet revisionism, when Stalin, you know, at the end of his life, started purging all the Jews, and when Khrushchev basically went further and denounced everything before, and then you have in China with Deng Xiaoping totally reforming Mao's policies, and you know, Mao, he was bad, but he wasn't completely controlled by the Jewish powers. Like he was bad, but that doesn't mean that there were Jews behind him.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We are back, and I know I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. There's a saying that has been said in China. I don't know how widely it is said, but if Mao had died in 1956, which would have been the dawn of the Great Leap Forward, he would have been viewed as the greatest man in Chinese history. And if he had died in 1966, which is the just before the Cultural Revolution started, he would have been viewed as a great man who had made some mistakes. But he died in 1976. So when you add both the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution together, it really destroys whatever legacy he would have had from uniting China into a single cohesive, strong state, you know, with the exception of Hong Kong and Taiwan, but almost all of China. After, you know, a couple of very, very bad centuries, he could have been regarded as a great man had he not lived so long. But he did live long, and it wound up being Deng Xiaoping's job to get the Chinese train on tracks. And it's my opinion that Deng Xiaoping's primary ideology was pragmatism and not socialism. So, but he inherited a party, a ruling party called the Communist Party of China, that had officially a communist ideology, and it had Mao Zedong as its revered founder, who had spent 30 years as the leader of China, building up a cult of personality and all sorts of other structures, and he couldn't be jettisoned. But what has made China into the arguably, although maybe it's not so arguable, the strongest economic power and likely the greatest power, the leading power of the 21st century, and soon to be maybe undisputably the greatest power that's ever been in humanity. I mean, because the United States has that title, but where's it going to go to? That won't be thanks to Mao. That's not going to be thanks to Mao. That's going to be thanks to Deng Xiaoping and his successors. And so at some point, I would think that there will be an opportunity or even a necessity to jettison Mao, to re-examine Mao, take his portrait off the buildings of the Red Square and off of the currency, and start having other heroes and other iconography. And my guess, and my complete, I'm not an expert, but my guess is probably within the next decade. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on how more aggressive or more tame the American Empire becomes, because the more aggressive the American Empire becomes, the more assertive China has to be in saying that we are in charge, we are still in control, and you're not going to challenge our sovereignty and our control. But the thing is, in the 1970s, when Deng Xiaoping first came to power, he actually did denounce Mao in many ways. He actually did encourage a lot of people to talk about the hardships and the turmoils and the evil that happened under the Cultural Revolution and before under Mao. So there was that. But I think what happened was, you had the Western liberal oligarchy was very, shall we say, naively hopeful that, China would become liberal just like, just like the rest of East Asia, like Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, so forth. And China would be, would eventually just, the CCP would disintegrate its power and become just like another liberal country. Essentially, what happened to Russia in the 90s, that would be what happened to China. So they were hopeful of that. And what happened was, a lot of the Chinese, they saw that, and as China was becoming stronger and stronger, and a lot of the Western liberal elites kept saying like, oh yeah, China's gonna lose power and become weaker. That's why over the recent years we've seen more of a promotion of Mao, not so much because they love Mao and they support Mao and want to go back to him, not at all, but because what they're saying is that we, the CCP, we are still in charge, we are here to stay, and we're not going anywhere. And you're not going to, to the Western liberal elites, you're not going to challenge our sovereignty and our power in our own sovereign nation. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're bringing back Mao, is to say that we're still in charge. Not so much, we love Mao, we revere him, we want to go back to him, but no, it's just we're still in charge, and that's what that means. So it all depends on how if the American Empire collapses and dissolves, just like the Soviet Union, then China can come out and say, okay, yes, we will, going forward, we will no longer be recognizing Mao, obviously he's part of history, but we will no longer be celebrating Mao and having his portrait. We will now be, just basically going forward with development, but revering all our heroes of the past, including some of the Kuomintang, who, fought in the Sino-Japanese War, and they have too. I mean, they've already started. They've already they revere Sun Yat-sen for sure.
Sun Yat-sen, but he's revered on both sides of the strait. His portrait, at least in the 80s when I went to Taiwan, his portrait was on at least some of the currency. Chiang Kai-shek, I think, was on some of the currency as well. Mm-hmm. The new Taiwan dollars, which was the currency they used. So here's the thing. It's not just China. It's countries in general you don't get to, well, you're kind of stuck with your history. I mean, you can go through periods of rejecting your history, which is what we're going through right now in the United States, where we're trying to reject our history. When I say we, I don't mean we, but I mean the ruling elites, you know, and they're tearing down the statues. This is something that's going on right now in the United States. And, you know, in the United States, look at all the turmoil that it's bringing, right? It's not easy. Whether it's justified or not, it's not easy to switch out your heroes. And so the leadership under Deng Xiaoping, under Jiang Zemin, under Hu Jintao, under Xi Jinping, they inherited Mao. He's on the money. He's on the money. He's on portraits. He's all over the place. And what to do about him? And to start taking down portraits or pulling down statues is very, very traumatic. And you know, you saw the same thing in even in the Soviet Union. Even when the Soviet Union was dismembered, and new entities were replaced it. You know, the Russian Federation, for the most part, replaced the Soviet Union. It's its official successor state. Even in the Russian Federation, they have trouble dealing with Stalin's legacy, right? Mm-hmm. They have trouble with that because so many people during the Soviet years bought into Stalin. And also, you can make the case that that Stalin had his good side too. You know, a lot of people in America don't want to hear about it, but you know, you can certainly make the case that he, for all his faults, he's the person who de-Bolshevized Russia. He executed all of those people, I guess with one exception maybe, but he executed all of those Jews who had been in the Politburo with him in the early days of the, you know, Bolshevik era. He killed them all. So, I mean, I'm not talking about whether this is good or bad or whatever, but I'm just saying it's a fact. And so they have, and you know, people, like even today, Putin will talk about the heroism of the, you know, the Red Army in World War II and defeating Hitler. And, you know, a lot
The Great Patriotic War.
The Great Patriotic War, right? And a lot of people who listen to this show tend to be more sympathetic to Hitler than to Stalin, for instance. But you know, they inherited that, and you've got millions, tens of millions of people whose grandfathers or great uncles died in that war, and you inherit these things. And we've got the same thing. Didn't you recently talk to somebody who is about to run off and join the army because of Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's really sad because I was talking to this guy who you know, would be called your red blooded American, you know, your rural, you know, American. You know, he loves his country. He loves, you know, what he sees as America, which is, you know, basically the, I guess you could say, the more the middle rural traditional America. But he's so misguided that, he was telling me that he recently joined the military because he wanted to. He thought that the United States was in huge trouble, that Russia and the Taliban were going to attack the United States, and that it was because of the withdrawal from Afghanistan and because of the, you know, the soldiers that got killed recently there, that's what motivated him to join the military. And it's very sad to see a lot of these middle Americans, these rural Americans, join, you know, basically get thrown into the meat grinder, get used by those who hate them, get used by those who are against them, who systematically want to destroy them, and get used by them for their own evil agenda. I mean, this is why, you know, people will ask me, well, why do you hate America so much? It's because I love middle America, because I love rural America. And, you know, just like Wang Huning's title, America versus America. That's exactly what this is. It's you know, you have the traditional America, the rural, the middle America. You know, your farmers, your ranchers, your truck drivers. You know, your blue collar workers and tradesmen, and you know, just your good old boy kind of red blooded American types on one side. But then you have the evil American empire, this global homo degenerate, you know, creature, this blob, this golem, that's just using these good old boy Americans, these true born, red blooded Americans, to do their bidding. And it's like, it's become so bad to where essentially the host, it's like, you have a parasite that's affected the host, and yet the host has trouble detecting the parasite inside him, and not only that, but obeys the commands of the parasites against those who are trying to free them from the parasite. I mean, you just look at, our culture, okay? Just look at the sports and how they've been completely destroyed. And people are saying, well, I enjoy my, my small town high school football game or this, and that's what I'm defending for. And all these other countries, like Russia and China, well, they're a threat. No. If, first of all, Russia and China have no intention of taking over the United States, but hypothetically speaking, let's say that Russia and China did take over the U.S., hypothetically, they split the U.S., Russia gets the eastern half and China gets the western half. I can almost guarantee you that under these two nations, you would not have this, degeneracy that's just infected, this wokeness and this just this anti-white, seething anti-white hatred in these, events and these, I guess you could say, local traditional events like, sports, whether it be football or baseball or whatever. You would still have that going on. It just would not be this, just like you said, Dr. Slatter, you'd much rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that could easily be said. Much rather be ruled by, of course, Russians and Jews. I know David Duke, he would like that. Or even better to be ruled by Mexicans than Jews, even, because, under Mexico, Mexicans, they don't tolerate the degeneracy, the global homo, and the anal stuff. The Mexicans, they hate that stuff. And, they don't take too kindly to black criminals either. So, even that would be a much better upgrade.
Yeah, this is the thing. People don't understand that they're being ruled by Jews because there's such, there's the censorship. The taboo is so strong. So you have all these people talking, like Tucker Carlson will talk about things, but he can't talk about the Jews. And then, of course, he has somebody on his show like Elbridge Colby, who seems to actually believe that, China's the real threat. I don't know. I don't know if he can be. He seems too smart to really be serious about that. But he probably is too smart. And he probably knows he's working for Jewish power. And if you, listen to my Friday show, you'll get that. But, when 9/11 happened, for people on the left, the idea that the United States might false flag an event wasn't that earth shattering, because people on the left already thought that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was basically a lie or a false flag, and so it wasn't really that much of a massive shift in thinking, a paradigmatic shift in thinking for people on the left. But for people on the right, it was, and they didn't know how to. They wanted to think that Reagan and Nixon had been the good guys, and the Vietnam War was a noble cause, and that their own military service was a, because so many of the right wingers were in the military, and it was all a noble cause, and so they had to come up with all of these ideas about 9/11 actually representing a massive departure in American history. But it's not a departure in American history. And you had a clip ready. I don't know if we'll get to it this show, or maybe we'll have to have it for next week. But just, a clip of from a Chinese news show stating what people really know, that out of the 245 years of American history, we've been at war for, 217 years or something?
I think it was only, 20 years of non-war for our 245 years of history. America has been a war machine ever since its, really ever since its creation, but now even more so. But really ever since 1865, that's when the American Empire took off, was after the war between the states.
And people have trouble coming to grips with the people, especially on the right, who saw 9/11, saw something was wrong with it, and they just had trouble coming to grips with that this wasn't so much a departure. It was basically a continuation of American history. It was just kind of like the next step. You know, how different was it from the going to war against Saddam Hussein the first time in 1991?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It was completely different. I'm sorry. It's completely the same.
Right. And we're up at the last break. We'll be right back.
Ob Sturm oder Streit, ob die Sonne uns lacht, der Tag blühen weiß, oder eiskalt die Nacht. Bestaunt sind die Gesichter, doch nur nicht unser Sinn, ja unser Sinn.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Okay, we are back, and so Kato, you have another recent experience you want to share with us?
Not really a recent experience. This was from a while back, a long while back, actually. There was this police officer that I knew that he was a city police officer in an area where let's just say there was a lot of diversity, and there was a huge Middle Eastern population, and yeah, this police officer that I knew, he hated the Muslims. Like, he would tell me, like, oh yeah, the Muslims, they're the worst, they're evil, and we, you know, they're the Muslims are the biggest threat to America, and we need to do something about the Muslim immigration. Yeah, we need to do something about the Muslim immigration. But he was saying, like, yeah, we need to go even further And, you know, of course, you know, as a result of that, that's why he, you know, he supports the Israelis, because he was like, yeah, because they're the biggest, you know, they're the biggest force against the Muslims, or that. And I was just thinking in my head, like, and I wanted to tell this guy, I wanted to be like, look, not that I believe we should be ruled by Muslims, but I can guarantee you, if Americans, if red-blooded, patriotic white Americans were ruled by Muslims instead of by what we have now, I guarantee you that you white families would not have to worry about your children coming out as trannies. And I guarantee you that you would not be deemed domestic terrorists by the Jewish Attorney General Merrick Garland for opposing tranny education to the children. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing, too. It's like, yeah, do I want to be ruled by Muslims? No. But even that is still better than this Jewish power that we have over us.
And, of course, at this point, we don't really have a choice. We don't get a choice. Nobody's asking us, would you like to be ruled by Chinamen or by Russians or by Muslims or by Mexicans? We don't have a choice. We're ruled by Jews, and we don't have a choice right now. And honestly, you know, I look around, and it's like just watching a dying patient. It's like watching somebody with a terminal disease. And I'm not saying it's too late, but I'm saying a lot of damage is being done. And with each passing day, it's what we can we can take back the situation, but the idea of restoring 1960 or whatever, that's not going to happen. The American people are in dire straits, and we're never going to recover all the way. The question is, how scarred are we going to be? And also the question is, I don't think it's too late, but at some point it will be too late, and we're not that far off. I know that's a lot. We got a minute left. You can respond. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Unfortunately, this is the sad reality. And we just got to do the best we can to save what's left. But to save what's left, what's eating away at what's left, we have to do our best to repel and to resist and oppose. And hopefully that will, well, I don't really hope for anything, but we do our best. We do the best we can, and we do what we can, and whatever happens, happens. But one thing for sure is that if we do our best, then at the end of the day, we fought the good fight.
I'm sure even if we can't save the, you know, America, we can probably salvage something. We'll wind up eventually salvaging something, so long as civilization doesn't get destroyed. And that's another thing. So we're not just really in a struggle to save ourselves, but really we're in a struggle to save civilization on Earth.
That's the thing. We can save much of rural middle America. We just have to get the parasite off of them. And they have, but more importantly, these rural middle Americans, they have to realize who the parasite is and what the parasite is doing.
Right. Thank you so much for joining me again, Cato.
Well, thank you, Dr. Slattery. Talk to you all next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Viewer Radio.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.